Committee, welcome to everyone. It's good to see you, the first meeting of this round of committees. Welcome to any visitors, please, so welcome along. Any apologies for the day? Advised of any, so Councillor Lawes might be known. Confirmation of the agenda, I haven't been advised of any additional items to be added, so we'll confirm that. Conflicts of interest, any conflicts of interest to be advised? Public forum, no public forum today. The minutes of the last meeting on the 22nd of March, they're there on page 6. Is there any comment, any issues to be raised with those minutes? Yeah, thank you, and I'll second that. All those in favour that they are true and correct record, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Now on to the main. The actions. I've just been talking to Mr. Donnelly about that. Basically, they're all closed out. The first and the third one, obviously, they've been done, and the second one, basically, was an endorsement of ongoing discussions with the people in the Ministry of Education. So it's an ongoing discussion. So that essentially is closed out as well. we'll move straight on to the bulk of the agenda and the recommendations. The first one is passenger transport. If we're in the right place. Yep. There's a number of items in here, and perhaps we'll go through them one by one and deal with them as efficiently as we can. There's the price there, and then obviously the Dunedin bus tenders. It's been worked through at the moment. Is there any comment on that? There's a delegation with that item. Any comment? No, everyone happy? Regional public transport plan, there's two amendments to that plan in item three there.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, we're on agenda item passenger transport update April 2017, yeah, am I on the right report? Yeah, page 17, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Can I ask a question then?
Yep.
It was just in relation to, from memory, there was some tender renewal, yeah? There's some tender renewal. And my question quite simply was, okay, we're flicking into tender renewals, how are these routes performing? The tenders must be for a reasonably significant period of time. And maybe when you reset a tender, it's the time to reflect how things are performing. So, through the chair, how are these works performing?
Mr. Collin. I'll ask Mr. Collin to comment on that. Thank you.
Through the chair, the tenders that are being issued reflect the changes that are prescribed in the Regional Public Transport Plan, which was adopted in 2014. The routes differ from the routes that are in the existing contracts. Some of the key changes, we have a transfer of the evenings, weekend services onto the daytime routes and mirroring the frequencies. There is contained within this report an overview of the patronage trend over the last 12 months compared with the previous 12 months. To ask how the contracts that are expiring are performing, if you consider that Unit 2, which is one of the tenders being tendered at this point in time, is the sole remaining commercial service within Dunedin, it's hard to do the correlation. We're looking at, again, carrying on the direction of the RPTP with removal of multiple route variations during the daytime services and consolidating routes. So there isn't a direct correlation between the existing services and those services that are coming in.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, so because we're fundamentally doing changes, realigning some of the routes yet through these tenders, this is the first time, I suspect. It's all part of that strategy where all the performance considerations were taken into place. Taken into consideration, yeah?
Through the chair, that is correct. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Vega.
The question I think that needs to be asked is, with these newly shaped routes which are all consulted to the RPT, and we're pretty excited about in some cases, particularly that Ridge Runner route which had a great deal of popular support when we consulted on, I think what Councillor Scott was really asking for, could we in 12 months' time have a detailed report on how these new configurations are performing and, if possible, in comparison with what existed before. That would be really helpful.
Mr. Collin.
If I may, through the chair, as the new PTOM units come into play, council will be required to publicly make available the commerciality ratios of the services, and that will include patronage and revenue performance. And that will be publicly available generally.
Thank you, Pat. Any further comment on this item? Everyone happy? We'll move on to changes to the regional passenger transport plan in Tipu and Concord. Any comment on that, Mr. Collin?
If I may, through the chair, since the writing of the report, we've received an additional 105 late submissions on the Waka Tipu. And at the close of business yesterday, we had 51 submissions in relation to Concord.
So there's a lot of public interest.
Yes.
Any comment on that? Not, it's work in progress, I guess, through the submission phase. The Balmowes Arthur Street Canongate extension, last time we had a petition about this. And this is an update as where we got to. We're just going into the process of surveying the residents in that area. Is there any comment on that? Mr. Conning, anything to add?
Yes, I can. At the time of writing this report and talking to the media last Friday, the questionnaires were supposed to have been with New Zealand Post last Friday. Due to a complication and an amalgamation of addresses from two different sources, there was a slight delay, and New Zealand Post received the lodgement yesterday.
Any comment? Councillor Scott.
Yeah, so there's been a little bit of flack and the odd email going around. So what's the, you know, just so we all are all clear, what's the program from here? The survey and the assessment of the survey and what type of time frame, so everybody understands. Thank you.
So in relation to the time frame for the survey, we haven't extended the closing date, and as far as this is a targeted mail drop to the residents and the ratepayers of the particular area, it allows for 14 days for the envelopes to come back. We don't obviously close off the feedback at the 14th day, because this is just the survey. And we anticipate that we'll be in a position to come back to council with the results of that survey that not only looks at the desire to change back to the old service, but to give us an understanding of how the residents were using the service previously, how they're using it now, so that council can make an informed decision. And we would expect that that report will come back to this council or this committee at the next committee round. If council are of the mind to reinstate service, it will not require an amendment to the RPT fee. And we can, if need be, introduce that service reasonably quickly at that decision making point.
Okay. Any comment? Any further comment?
Just a question, Susan. Chair, Jared, does the questionnaire allow random, random type comments to be added, obviously related to the bus service, but is the questionnaire structured in a way that there are questions and then there is an opportunity to make a general comment, so it doesn't restrict participants just to those questions?
If I can, through the chair, the questions are quite specific. It asks for the household about the use of the service, where they access the service if they accessed it previously. It asks the household if they're using the service at the moment, and again, how they're accessing that service. The questions are specific to a household and identified uniquely to the household and the ratepayer, so that we understand where the responses are coming from. And more importantly, the question of whether or not if the service was reintroduced, if the residents would use that service. I can't recall whether or not there's an opportunity for further comment in as far as this particular survey is specific to the request of council to canvass the residents as to whether or not they want to reinstate that service. We haven't used it as a broader mechanism for receiving other comment. But as with any survey, other comments will be obviously considered and conveyed.
Thank you.
Can we monitor any change that's occurred in patronage and what usage we're actually getting currently from that area? Ticketing and the like?
If I came through the chair, it's particularly difficult with the existing ticketing system to monitor such a targeted area in relation to performance and patronage. The new ticketing system that's scheduled to be introduced at the beginning of next year will allow us to drill down to a stop-by-stop basis. We could make, and will make, some comparisons to the route performance when we come back to council. But I would caution council as to whether or not they should put too much weight on that, as opposed to the desire of the community and the amount of desire within the community for the service to be reinstated.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments? None. We'll move on to the next one. Petition we received at our last meeting regarding the Mosel bus service to the stop at Centre City New World. It's the staff decision has been made. It was publicised in today's paper. Any comment?
Through the chair, thank you. I actually got on the bus yesterday and I rode it because I thought, this is my area, we'll have a look. Here's my go bus. I could have had a this might offer a seat. I could have had a car, I had a great chat to the bus driver, and I'd like to make these comments if I can, please. The bus was beautiful, well set out, well cleaned, lovely driver. I liked the code of conduct on it, and I liked the fact that there were two seats that you could pull down if you had a disability, and that's where this comes into play, because people got on the bus, especially when we got to Centre City, got off, were going to the hospital, and I had people get on again that were coming home from the hospital that had x-rays. And so I had a chat, because if you don't do it, well, you're not going to know, are you? And most thing they were concerned about was, if we took the bus route off them, would there be bus shelter? So in other words, if they've got to jump off this bus, and then they've got to get on the bus from Balaclava that's going to take them outside the hospital every 15 minutes, not being awful, but are they going to get wet? Because you've got to imagine that the disability or their mobility is not the same if they're on crutches and things like that. And I did witness that yesterday, so that was something. Obviously, they talked about the fact that it was the ease, you know, that there's Centre City, straight ahead, that's the hospital, and then, you know, you come back versus the bus hub. I guess it's a hard thing, isn't it? Because there's no point in me putting a motion through, it's a more compassionate thing for me. You know, I understand there possibly has to be a change, and the people of Mosgiel are perhaps going to have to accept that they're going to have to go to a new place, that's fine. I guess the thing is you're out of town, a lot of people I've noticed have come into Mosgiel and they're just going to have to accept that perhaps there's going to be more time allowed for their appointments. You know, they're not going to get to that 9 o'clock or perhaps 10 o'clock appointment within the hour. That's what they wanted in the past, but it's just not going to happen. I can see that. We can only hope, I guess, that when they get off the bus from Mosgiel and get on the Balaclava bus that it is on time. So I also like to say that I counted 30 people on the bus on the year and a half, and I think 28 of them had a go-kart, loved it, thought it was a really good idea. And most of those people, I would say, without probably being just at a guess, were probably over 70. So as you say, the population in Mosgiel is growing. The census tells us here in 2043 there'll be a 40% increase. I guess my thing is, as long as we keep a bus service, would be great.
Any further comment on that? Mr. Collin, have you got a comment on that?
Just one comment through the chair. Staff are making a recommendation, we're not making a decision. It's a decision to make. The Balaclava service will be a 15-minute frequency. It's servicing one of the main targeted destinations within the city, being the university precinct. and it's important that that frequency exists. In relation to the southern services, if we find demand, and there is good demand, and the demand warrants it, there is the ability to introduce a closer frequency over time, as opposed to just putting more buses on the ground. And that will be monitored over the progression of the network.
Councillor Hope.
So can I just reiterate what I think you said? Are you saying that maybe, say, if you've got the buses, and you know it's really busy in the morning and it's kind of busy in the afternoon, are you saying that maybe one of those times in the morning you may look at having a drop-off point maybe back at that centre city?
No, if I can, through the chair, I wasn't suggesting a realignment of the route. What I'm suggesting is, as capacity increases, we will need to consider the frequency that we apply the service and the capacity of the bus servicing the community. In relation to the shelter comment that was provided, staff and council did receive a considerable amount of feedback in relation to the amount of shelter being provided in the central city hub as part of that proposition, and certainly the design team are currently working on how we can expand the shelter provided in that residential. And that will come back to council.
Thank you for that. Councillor Leaker.
Yeah, I thank Councillor Hope for the thoroughness and the helpfulness of all that commentary that she's offered us. It's been very useful indeed. And it raised a question in my mind that I'm sure Mr. Collins has got a quick answer. The success of this transfer from hub to hospital seems to me to depend very much not on the hub but on the hospital site, that we can secure a bus park there. It's an area where short-term parking is under incredible demand right through the day, as far as I can tell. And there is not shelter over the footpath there, not straight across the footpath anyway. Can Mr. Collins give us any reassurance that things are going well with DCC in terms of securing a bus park area and it will be sheltered?
Mr. Collins?
If I can, through the chair, certainly the shelter on the stop where waiting time will be required back to the Central City Bus Hub is a key consideration. And I can confirm that discussions with DCC staff are progressing well, and they recognise that there will be a casualty of short term parking to accommodate the bus service. But they're certainly discussing that further.
With that, Mr. Chairman, through you, Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering about the cover and that. Currently, the people from Central Otago get on the Four Square bus. I'm not sure whether Balclutha has a Four Square bus service or not, but Four Square provide one from the Wanaka residents get to Cromwell, and it goes from Cromwell down to Alex and picks up patients. But what I'm trying to get to, it actually drives up into the back of the hospital there where the ambulances go and drops everybody off. I don't know what the turning circle is around there in that reception area. I know that I can remember picking my mother up there many, many years ago. But I'm just wondering, is there anything we can look at other ways of making sure that the expanding community of Mosgiel are getting this attention, which Councillor Hope has quite rightly drawn our attention to? There may be some other options we need to look at also, because I think it is going to be important that we do provide some sort of service somehow, or encourage the community to get actively in behind one of some description to get these people to and from the hospital, based on what Councillor Hope has informed us.
Okay, I'm certainly not aware of what goes on, what the situation down there, Mr. Collin.
Well, if I may, through the chair, and I don't want this to come out the wrong way, but the focus of this discussion has been very much on Mosgiel residents getting to the hospital. The key with the bus hub and the Balaclava service, it actually provides a connection for all bus users. And I don't think council would lose sight of that. We don't have good connection with the hospital facility at this point in time, anywhere on the network. And certainly the changes that we're implementing with the next round of tenders will do that.
Councillor Woodhead.
So I found this a good. It's good to understand the facts, and thank you for outlining the exact distances and what's going to be required here. So for those that aren't able to walk from the bus hub, and I think we need to remind ourselves we've significant investment in the bus hub and a massive change in how services are provided and where they're based from, with it, which is a big part of the upgrade that's underway. So, but for those that do have issues with walking that distance, then there is a link going to be available. So I think it's important but good to see the clarity on it. I support the staff recommendation as a result of the look at what's going on here. So,
thank you.
My comment was along a similar vein. Strong advocate for the bus and making it as usable and accessible as possible. Strong advocate for the hub too, and it is in my mind in a brilliant location. You couldn't really get closer to the hospital unless you did manage to somehow get it within that turning bay or something along those lines. But just also about the ability for people who aren't as mobile as other people or perhaps have a disability, and perhaps just to remind ourselves of the services also that are available to those people that would take them right to the door of the hospital as well if required. So many of those people will be eligible for other transport modes as well. So, we need to keep that in mind as well, but absolutely need to make sure that the bus is able to drop people off as close as possible to that hospital, but servicing all of Dunedin in a practical and efficient way. So, yeah, it's a mixture of all those things. Thanks.
Thank you. I support the recommendations of the staff, Mr. Chairman, and whilst one can sympathise with, in the 2014 plan change, one of the things we were trying to get away from was providing a door-to-door service, notwithstanding that, you know, I'm still sympathetic to this situation, but that was one of the criteria that around town where the buses had sort of got away up onto routes where it was very uneconomic, and we tried to bring it back to reasonably streamlined, knowing that it wasn't going to please everybody, of course. As I said, I support the staff recommendation.
Thank you for that. Any further comment? We'll thrash this around a bit. I think there's some important comments to note there, particularly about some of the concerns and the possibility of maybe some changes in the future. See how it goes first, so we need to note those. Okay, we'll move on to the ticketing system replacement. We had a paper on this in committee at the last meeting, and this is the outcome of that paper. A tender has been awarded. Any comment on that? No. Total mobility, there's been some changes there with regard to ID cards, replacing the voucher system. Any comment? No, everyone happy? The patronage for the Dunedin and Waikato networks over the last 5 years. Graphs there highlighting up slightly in Dunedin, down a bit in Waikato. Any comment?
Good to see a slight. We're on the positive, yeah. Mr. Chairman, and let's see if it continues to lift.
I guess at Waikato, with all the changes, we're going to
wait
and see.
Yeah.
Councillor Kempton?
Yes, just carrying on from Councillor Woodhead's comments, in both of these situations, these patronage figures are not as useful in a historic sense as they will be in the future, because there are big changes on both networks. But at least we've got a really solid. They do tell the story that we know, is that there's a hardcore of bus users in Dunedin that come hell or high water use the bus, and it'll go up and down just a little bit from time to time, and it's quite difficult in Dunedin to move people to the bus or away from the bus. You know, something big has to happen. But in Wakatipu, I mean, that tells the story there of you know, of declining patronage over time, although it's not, doesn't look that significant. But we have to keep in mind that in Wakatipu, we're looking at a load of people yet to get on a bus, and we're looking at a potential change in the fare structure that will tell us whether or not we've just got a core of people to use or whether in fact what the Wakatipu residents are promising, that they'll all leap on buses, will actually eventuate. So in other words, I think it's important that they have that message that it's time to put their money where their mouth is in terms of saying we want public transport, we want it to be cheap, we want a uniform price, and we're all going to use it.
Good comments. Thank you. Any further comments?
Much as I like Councillor Kempton's kind of optimistic view of the Wakatipu situation, I don't recall any mass reassurance coming from that population that they were indeed going to all hop on buses, as Councillor Kempton said. I do recall that we have, in partnership with QLDC and NZTA, guaranteed exploration and implementation, hopefully, of low flat fares. But let's not kid ourselves. That's been tried in many places. Most recently in Invercargill, from memory, where they had very low flat fares or free fares. What happened? It stuck with the hardcore of bus users that Councillor Kempton identified. Almost nobody else made a discretionary decision to swap their car for a bus. And Queenstown, as we know, just like Dunedin, is awash with cheap cars. Now, I can't imagine the people who own them are just going to leave them at home unless there is some other carefully managed plan B in case our plan A doesn't work. I'm not as optimistic as my colleague along the bench here, and I wonder what we're going to do if Queenstown's problems remain as increasingly acute as they are, even though the bus fares drop and the frequencies increase and the routes become more direct.
Councillor Kempton.
Yes, it was just a response, Councillor Deacon. Certainly, Queenstown Lakes District Council's original enthusiasm, and obviously this has to go through a consultation process yet, but their original enthusiasm was based on a very big, now I can't recall the name of the organisation, but it's functioning really well, and it's a community development, it's a large community group working on the development of the region in many different areas, and if somebody could help me with its name, it's gone right out of my head. But in any event, that was the group that produced a very comprehensive report around public transport. There were several of us, I think, went to the launch of that, and that is what has galvanised enthusiasm of Queenstown Lakes District Council and brought us to this point. So it's not unfounded, but with respect to optimism, well, I'm naturally something of an optimist, but on the other hand, it is still nevertheless somewhat of a challenge.
I guess we've got to give it our best shot regardless, Councillor Head.
Yes, and the other aspect of that is it's that the flat fee is just one aspect of a integrated business case, you know, parking, roading design, in-time priority for buses and the likes are all part of this push for encouragement for the community to hop on buses. And we're seeing a slight lift in Dunedin patronage there. It is good to remind ourselves that, you know, we're 200,000 trips a month. We're carrying about 1 million passengers in 500,000 in Wakatipu currently, and we're the target is to double that within 24 months. So we've got to give it a try, and but I need to stress that it's part of there's a much larger integrated series of changes that are all working together and being timed to be implemented at the appropriate times to encourage people onto public transport in the Waikato. So,
Thank you for that. Any further comment? We must move on to the recommendations. Three recommendations there, one concerning the MySchool bus service, the other one the tender process which was going on for two of the buses owns. Any comment on those? If not, I'll move the recommendation, seconded by Councillor Noon. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Against, carried. Right, next paper is the Director's Report. Mr. Donnelly, can you highlight anything there?
I could just give an annual plan update. At the time we wrote this, we had just over 500 submissions. As of today, this morning, we've got just over 600, and submissions close on Friday week. So certainly we're getting a good level of response on that. The other item there is response to the public forum in the previous meeting, and just highlights the initiatives that the port has in place for liaising with the community around those issues that were raised, and also points out that council has the avenue through the upcoming statement of corporate intent to offer any direction to the port it may see fit.
Yep. Okay, thanks for that. Looks like with any plan, bring your own tent.
I would stress a lot of those that we're receiving to date are people filling out the form, and they're not. It's not 600 all asking to actually be heard. So maybe a tent's not sounds quite required.
We wait to go yet. All the same, so it looks like we're going to get a lot. Yeah, that's good.
Mr. Chairman, what was the total number received last year?
I believe we had 200 to 300.
Yeah, 300.
Yeah, and that was up on the previous year.
Yep.
I think probably our new system encouraging participation is working, obviously. So
but a lot of it, I presume, will be on the same issue, so if you break it down, it's probably not that much of a change, and it is good. I mean, that's what it's all about. So.
Yep. Okay, just from that, the public forum at the last meeting concerning Port Chalmers, any comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, just as the directors alluded to, the statement of corporate intent is the appropriate place to perhaps raise the issues that Mary McFarland, perhaps not raise the exact issues that she's highlighted, but that's the avenue in the vehicle. And I know that the liaison committee is meeting in a couple of weeks' time or whatever. I'm just wondering whether we should be on the front foot in terms of asking Port Otago or the board of Port Otago to consider seriously those issues raised. I know they were here and heard them, and I'm not suggesting they wouldn't consider them seriously if we didn't ask them to, but they're clearly going to submit a statement of intent to us, and I just wondered whether a polite email from the chairman or the CEO to say that we'd appreciate some comment around those issues raised by Mary on behalf of the community. So that was just a thought. Otherwise, we receive the statement of intent, and then we perhaps discuss those issues again and ask them to respond. And I was just thinking, well, maybe just highlight and ask them to give some consideration before they submit their draft statement of intent. Just a thought.
Yeah, I'm interested in Councillor Noon's phrase, Mary on behalf of the community. The question that actually went through my mind was actually, what does the community actually think? Are there any issues that have some momentum for the community as a whole? And what this report here refers to is the Port Liaison Committee, and I'm not sure how many people actually turn up to that. Obviously there's been actions over time with acoustic work and different things and considerations, and they've been articulated here. But certainly one of my questions, maybe when the port turns up again, is to simply say, well, do you ever survey the community? What does the community actually think about the community issues that are associated with the port, as opposed to one individual's turned up and here's their wish list? What do you think? That's my comment.
Is there any further comment on that? Look, I support Councillor Noon. I just think it'd be nice to get a handle on the adverse effects. Are they getting worse significantly? You know, what's the trend? You know, obviously, there's been effects down there for always. Obviously, there's been a lot of changes down there. Councillor Robertson?
As well as effects, perhaps, I think, looking at the opportunities. It's changed a lot, the focus down there from, I don't know, being a port town to now being the doorway to Dunedin as well for a lot of our visitors. So what does that mean for the locals? What does that mean for us as the owners of the port? And are there opportunities? I think we heard that port were open to some more beautification and those types of projects, but collectively we need to think about what is best for port, and agree that we need to talk to the residents as well about how all that is impacting on them as well.
Mm. Well, I suspect they're probably giving a lot of consideration, given that port's a little announcement yesterday, and you know, they see it as positive, but obviously there'll be a lot of considerations with that for them down there.
Mr. Chairman, can I just make a comment? I've had a lot to do with that community over most of the time on the City Council, and I think it's fair to say, probably answering Councillor Scott's question about Mary speaking on behalf of the community, the issues that she raises are very similar issues that a number of people in that community raise. And it's fair to say that community is very proud and passionate about the port. But I think the point is, it's around, and the figures that were presented by Port Otago, the increase in log traffic was 30-something percent, increase in 5 or 10% increase in containers, container movement. So there's some growing pains, and I think the community are just asking for, you know, how can we strengthen the partnership, as Councillor Robertson's alluded to, and how can we ensure that there's harmony going forward as the port grows? And, you know, there's, as you say, Councillor Robertson, this is a good story, but it's a matter of probably just making sure that everyone's talking to each other and understanding what the issues are.
So what's the consensus out of this meeting? Do we leave it up to the chairman to have a chat to the chairman of Port Otago? It's not a threatening chat, but just...
No, it's quite a conversation. Yeah. We've discussed these matters a number of times, Mr. Yeah. Chairman, and clearly, as you identified, the chairman and chief executive were in the room when Mary presented. And we've got a liaison, our port liaison group coming up. Mr. Donnelly, remind me, in a month's time or so?
22nd of June.
And that, so we can have a chat face to face.
Is it a chat or a letter?
Well, I think we've got a process coming up, and we can, yeah.
What's your own thing?
Whatever's the most effective, Mr.
Chairman. Yeah, I was just going to say that same thing.
The chairman has a good rapport, obviously, with the board and with every faith in the verbal conversation. Yeah. He's effective as a leader.
Mr. McRae, did you have something?
So, the Port Environment Committee, which I represent this council on a non-regulatory role, that interacts with the community, and a lot of these matters and these issues that are highlighted here are directly addressed by that committee to the community, which has representatives from Kerry's Bay and Port Town.
Okay. Okay, we'll leave it there. The chairman's going to have a chat to Faulkner, and we'll take it from there. Okay, anything further on that? Councillor Powell listed there. No, any comment? And there's three recommendations there. Well, I'll move those recommendations. Have a seconder, please. Thank you, Councillor Hope. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. The next paper is subject as grants, legal cases, and personal grievances. Mr. Donnelly, comment on that?
I'd the paper can probably be taken as read. The list of grants is attached. I would just point out on those, the majority of those grants, particularly around the Environmental Enhancement Fund, only started towards the end of the last financial year. The letters that go out when we make those grants request a annual 12-monthly report back. So we've listed the dates of when those reports back are due on those various grants, the first of which is coming up at the end of this financial year. And we do have scheduled for the council meeting in 2 weeks, the Yellow-Eyed Penguin Trust will be presenting on their activity.
Okay, well, we'll move through them one by one. The grant situation, comments on that, please.
Just a question, Mr. Donnelly, the annual report back, does that report cover off their entities, their own annual report, or is that a report based on the funding they've received from the ORC and whether it's been spent on what we asked them to spend?
Yeah, we ask for a report back on the activity that we've given them the money for, not just a report back on their general activity.
Thank you.
Okay. I assume, like, obviously this will have a by our auditors at the end of the year, but I think it is important. This, probably in the past we haven't made too many grants, but in the last 2 years, you know, there's been a significant rise in that, so it's important. I think it's important we do have rigid process, solid processes around this in terms of reporting anything. Councillor Laws?
I actually raised this issue, and I have to say I'm even more concerned now by the answer to it, the implications that flow from it. I want to particularly address the Manuhirikia Water Strategy funding, which now I see is up to $544,000 of Otago Regional Council money. And I have been waiting for and have been scouring through the archives of the Otago Regional Council annual reports and annual plans for some degree of accountability for that funding from this organisation, and it's still not here. In fact, the report says, and I'll take you to the last paragraph on page 24. In the case of the Manuhirikia Water Strategy Group, a reference to their website is provided. There are numerous reports available, and it's not prudent to print and append the individual documents. The question I asked was, what is the effectiveness of the grant from the Otago Regional Council's point of view? In other words, is it getting value for money? That's the issue. And it's still not been answered. And it's $544,000. So that's the first issue I want to flag. The second issue is, this all came out of the Audit and Risk Committee, which I don't think is doing its job. But it came out of the concept of how we report, how we spend, and how we account for public expenditure through the Otago Regional Council. And it comes out of the basic principle of the Local Government Act, which is openness and transparency. It's one of the leading, if not the leading, principle of the Local Government Act. And again, I would expect all of these reports and grants to be reported in this document here. This is the annual report. And if you look through it, it's not there. Neither is it in our draft or in our annual plan. So we don't have an accountability mechanism for the way in which we spend this money. And I want to flag that with you now, because I think it's something that we need to address prior to the publication of the next annual report. The second thing is that the Local Government Act was amended in 2012. So as part of this, I was also asking, okay, what sort of reporting mechanism do we have? For example, one of the most basic things is staff numbers, salaries, salary bands. And I haven't seen that reported anywhere. Unless somebody can point it out to me. Do you know where it is, Nick? Is it in here somewhere? I mean,
it's an annual report.
Sorry, is it no, it's not.
Well, it usually is. There's a page at the back.
Mm. Yeah. The page at the back doesn't have it. And I've looked under rates revenue and everything like that, and I'm looking for it. And I've been looking for it. So if somebody could find that, that would be great.
There's an is it called employment or remuneration section?
Yeah.
Remuneration.
Was it about section 20?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks. That's what I got. Now, the next one is in relationship to personal grievances.
Oh, we're just dealing with this one at the moment, the grass one.
Okay. Can we have a report, please, on that money of the $544,000? Now, to put it into context with that particular issue, before this man here, Water Strategy Group, went public last week, in both Radio New Zealand and in the Otago Daily Times, for saying that this project has the capacity to fall over as a result of what they perceive to be, and I'm not going to enter that discussion just yet, the arbitrary minimum flows that are going to be imposed in that particular area. Now, I haven't seen a report back on that. That seems a fairly drastic and dramatic development in this particular case, but we've spent $544,000 on this, and I'd like to get some sort of understanding of, are we getting value for money, how are we progressing in this area, where's the annual report on how that's effectively been spent, and all those sorts of things. And so I really want to flag it now, and I hope I'm not the only councillor who says this, but I suspect I'm not.
I actually agree with what Councillor Lawson has actually said, and you know, I'd widen it up that just as in terms of our responsibilities, that with all these grants, you know, what is the effectiveness? So, you know, I would certainly appreciate at some appropriate time, you know, some auditing process. So, for example, with the HALO grant, where we've put in a significant amount of money, $132,000, a feedback loop. Yes, it's been spent. How effectively has it been spent? What are the outcomes? And in terms of the Manuhiri Care, I agree with Councillor Laws. We need that accountability in terms of how we operate.
Mr. Chairman, it has been raised with me that that the Chief Executive did used to attend the strategy meetings for the Manuhiri Care, but in recent times, or quite some time, he has not attended. And I'm thinking, well, maybe if he's not attending, somebody else should be attending in his place. And they are very disappointed that we aren't having a representation there. They're very good at giving me the minutes, and I have attended a couple of their meetings, just as Graham Bell was an elected member, obviously taking an interest. You know, I do get all their minutes and reports. But I believe that if we're investing that amount of money, and there was a commitment made originally that the Chief Executive was to be involved, if he can't be involved, someone else should be involved. You know, that is a big investment. It is a big project. And they are acknowledging the fact that we are missing. And I believe, through you, Mr. Chairman, we should be, someone else should be appointed to do the job if the Chief Executive can't add some continuity to those discussions.
Councillor Neil. No one would disagree that proper auditing should be done of that. But I just remind Council where that money comes from that fund that we set aside specifically for irrigation studies. But also, I actually don't agree bringing up the fact that whether that scheme goes ahead or not is irrelevant as far as this fund is concerned, because that's there to do the study of the practicalities of this irrigation scheme. The other one is an issue totally separate in itself and quite divorced from that, so I don't
I don't believe that you can try and draw a parallel. How do you think we've wasted a whole lot of money here because this could happen over here, because the two things are really administratively disconnected.
Yeah, it's a different one, and I guess some of these issues were what we gave consideration to when we decided not to invest in the terrace scheme at the end of the day. Councillor Woodhead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So it's, and Councillor Neville just touched on it, so we do have funding policy in place and delegations around the use of those funds. And they are targeted for, you know, pre-feasibility and feasibility studies for communities such as this. Menuhin Kia was decided a number of years ago, as we're well aware, to be a very important catchment from a number of reasons. One, there's around half of the deemed permits sit inside that catchment. Two, there is a significant opportunity for growth in efficient use of water and for enhancement of or reliability of the existing irrigation, but also potential for growth in that valley. So it's an important opportunity and from a regulatory perspective crucial to the deemed permit process for the region. We're co-funders of all these blocks of work they do as they move towards gathering the information and deciding as a community whether they proceed with a new irrigation scheme or an enhanced irrigation scheme or any changes at all. So when the applications are made, there'll be some funds come from the local community, and usually in the form of irrigation companies or individual irrigators, and a reasonable chunk of the money will normally come from the Crown via their project funding. And so there's you know, quite a bit of scrutiny in the application process to get it over the line in the first place, and where regional communities are seen as important collaborators in those processes to actually get approval for the Crown Fund in the first place. We do see the outputs from those reports and all the reports that are produced, and that is a reference in Mr. Donnelly's report to their website. They're all there and publicly available, as I understand it. You know, there's a lot of work required, and communities on their own are often not able to fund these pre-feasibility studies. And so, we've discussed this in the past, putting in place our funding policy, and delegated the chief executive to get on and work with these communities. Mr. Bodecker attends as many meetings as he can. He is in regular contact with the chairperson. On occasions there is conflict on his diary. On other occasions, the agenda items on the day aren't actually relevant to the regional council, so we don't need to be there. A catch-up phone call afterwards, or understanding what's on the agenda. So it's around prioritising his time. But I just want to, in his absence, not trying to defend the chief executive, but I mean, he's got a very good line of communication with the chairperson and a number of stakeholders on the Menuhin Kia group. So, this funding stream has changed over the years. You've already referred to the Lindis. There was a lot of money spent there on similar work. The Strathtyre has received some in the past and has got work underway again currently. And it's all part of, on behalf of the whole region, ensuring these communities explore all the opportunities that are available, understand all the options, and seek professional support in exploring and gathering the information they need to make that crucial decision in the end. When they get to the sharp end of those decisions, then we're essentially out of there. And we've made it very clear that we're not intending investing in irrigation schemes, but we do support very strongly the community with that earlier part of the process. So, just a couple of reminders there, and hopefully that helps a little bit. And I think it would be good to have or request that the chair of the Menihira Kurea Strategy Group comes and reports to council at some point, and lets us know from their perspective where they're at.
No, we'll probably go to June for an update.
Because
we had previously. Councillor Robertson.
Thanks for that. And I think we are probably all aware of the fund and what it's used for and the importance of it. We need to remind ourselves, I think at one stage we actually wanted to change the name of the Bulk Rural Water Fund. I actually thought we had, and it reflected whole of community and resource management rather than Bulk Rural Water. So the point of it was to benefit the entire community. So projects needed to not only support the productive use of the land and water, but also the environment. So they had to be a win-win type of project. And I've got no arguments that is, hasn't been adhered to. There are some strict criteria for that fund. And there's strict criteria for all of those funds there. But I think we do need to open our minds to being more transparent, more prudent, more financially responsible, less ad hoc. We need to look at our all of those funds, look at the criteria, make sure that they're there, they are there for the criteria. But then there's the reporting requirements, and that's where I think we are falling down. We don't have transparent reporting requirements at the moment, and we do need to have that. I think, they need to be not ad hoc. We have recently put in for the Environmental Enhancement Fund that we would like reporting back if the CEO, although he's able to delegate up to $200,000, if it exceeds $50,000, we'd like reporting back. But that's not consistent through all the grants, so I just think we do need to have reporting internally requirements, and also reporting from those parties that we have funded, specifically what they've spent the money on. I've got no problems that it's been spent responsibly, and you can see the outcomes. We don't fund most of these people until we see the output, but we haven't actually got policies in place around that. So, I think we do need to tighten up on that.
Thank you for that. Councillor Deegan.
Yeah, one of the things that Councillor Laws said that resonated with me, that made me feel very uncomfortable indeed, was the potential relationship between our support of a community such as the Manuhira Kia and their business success. I was very aware of that shroud waving that went on a couple of weeks ago, saying to us through the media, if you set flow regimes that are not in our interest, then we're doomed. We're not going to make any money. Now, that makes me feel queasy as a councillor, because we can put a funding regime in place, which we have done, to help communities such as this one and the Strathtory and so on, explore the possibilities of their area, see what they can do through their water resources to increase their productivity. That's cool. I was a supporter of that right from the days when Graham Martin floated the idea. I still am. But I'm very negative, is the obvious word, about that being thrown back in our face. How can you help us with one hand and slap us in the face with the other hand? Through more flow regime setting processes. And we know, as councillors around this table, that they're totally different, equally objective. No, one's actually quite subjective, that is helping the communities. But we've got to be entirely objective. in the way we fix flows on the Lindis or the Marahirikera or the Kadrona or any other river. And I don't like the trend from this community of waving shrouds in our face about a third of the way through the process. So I thank Councillor Laws for reminding us of that potential risky relationship. Thank you.
Councillor Kempton.
The discussion has drifted significantly into my corner. I agree entirely with Councillor Robertson with respect to the fact that we've got some historic grants here that are reported on given the standards we've set for more modern ones are potentially reported on inconsistently, and to my mind that's just a matter of continuous improvement and bringing all of those up to a consistent level. But it's been alluded to by both Councillor Robertson and Councillor Deaker that our interest in irrigation is actually about balancing the influences of irrigation and all of the other community values associated with those waterways. And what we know is that there are often irrigation propositions which might actually assist, particularly if they involve storage and lots of storage, they might assist us to find a really good path through so that all of the values of the river remain intact and all community interests are served. We shouldn't, in my mind, that's where the environmental element of that whole picture comes. So this isn't just a matter of looking after the economic benefits. But one of the things, and this is coming on from Councillor Deaker's point, one of the things that we have to be very careful of here is that as soon as that group starts forming their views around a minimum flow regime for Manahirikia River, that might be the point at which we very carefully choose the time and place at which we interact with them. And that's going to be really, really important, because this council has to go into what will be a critical minimum flow regime process, certainly when we're getting down to the business end of that, walking a very clear line being able to say that we have, there is no predetermination, we have not been previously influenced by anybody. So I think we're going to have to be quite careful about that, and it's not just this group, it will be any group in a similar situation where they are starting to attempt to form opinion around the very items that we're going to be, that will be included in the hearing. That's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Well said.
That's all it was.
Because this is where I started from too. My concern is we've got ourselves into a position where we are employing mutually contradictory policies. On the one hand, and the chairman's just said it, and that's my concern, Stephen, that this was put in place, this fund, to try and economically grow farm. You said it yourself, with the potential for growth, you said. Well, we're not talking about environmental growth here. The idea of the irrigation, and in particular the Manahirikia scheme, is to protect their current water allocation and their farming operations, and potentially to expand it. And the Otago Regional Council has put $544,000 into a feasibility study to that end. And now there are environmental considerations strongly driven by central government, and rightly so, to say, regional councils have a role to make sure that they play the balancing role. And in a funny sort of way, you've ended up, it seems to me, needing to be policemen, but being an active player. Now, admittedly, the rules have changed since 2011-12 when this operation started up and the first grant went in, Stephen. But in 2017-18, I asked two questions. First, is the money being spent effectively? So that's a pretty obvious question, and I thank councillors for agreeing that we need some form of formal reporting mechanism on that. So the second issue here is, now that Michael and Trevor have raised it, is, yeah, you're talking about pulling out after spending $544,000 on a scheme that at the end of the day is designed to enhance, not just find replacements for deemed water permits, but also to develop the Manuhirakia Valley for farming and economic growth purposes. And that, I think, places us in a very difficult position when we are going to be also here as safeguards of the environment and making that kind of judgment as to where you draw the line. And I just want to flag that as well.
Okay, well, time's ticking by, but just quickly, I have a quick run around. Councillor Woodhead was first.
Yeah, so there's a whole range of issues looked at here, and we understand very clearly, this council, that the current regime with respect to water supply, mining permits, reliability of irrigation, the provision of flood irrigation and the likes, which have significant environmental impacts in some cases, is all part of this picture. It's not just economic growth, right? But there's an opportunity to generalise for a better future. And so the whole range of things come into play there, and certainly mining permits are an aspect on the side. The other thing I'd like to say is there is, and I agree with Councillors Kempton and Deeker, the total severance between these two processes. And any community, when they feel a bit of heat, will try and leverage some of those processes to pull them together and blur the lines a little bit. I want to be clear that the Manuhirakia Strategy Group has stayed as a group, formal group, and their chair has stayed out of this process. I'm not aware of any comments from that group formally, but what we've seen from the community and the comments that Councillor Deeker was referring to, and the response we've seen, is individual irrigators or irrigation companies that sit within that valley. And we're very clear, and Mr. Bodeker certainly is, of the severance between those two processes. We've been working with them. At one point, they were going to bring a minimum flow proposal forward on as a private plan change on behalf of that community. That hasn't proceeded, and council has picked up the baton again and moved forward with the minimum flow process that we know we're in the middle of. So some of the community might struggle with the severance between those two processes, but from our organisational perspective, we're very clear.
Councillor Scott.
I'd like to move a motion that we receive a report on the effectiveness and outcomes of each grant, including the bulk water grants, at the end of this financial year.
Is there a second for that?
Yeah, I'll second that. It's a good idea. It's a bit vague, but it's a good start. Somebody might be able to sharpen it.
Well, we are going to receive a lot of these reports. Okay, if this wants to clarify things. There's been a lot of issues raised today. I guess with irrigation schemes, there's no certainty. So I noticed the South Canterbury one falling over in the last couple of days at this stage due to lack of uptake on this scheme. Was someone over here on the speed? Was it you, Councillor Deagle?
No, sorry, I've given up. It's okay, it's all been covered.
I just wondered whether Councillor Scott and Councillor Deagle would entertain the idea of including the possibility of asking these organisations to provide the latest set of audited accounts as part of their reporting, because if I can just speak to that for a moment. So I think it's important that we're aware of their financial situation and that they've got good practices in place as we contribute ratepayer funding to them. So it was just, okay, we get a report back on their activities associated with the funding, but an overall snapshot, i.e. audited accounts, so we're aware of their financial stability.
It's probably very difficult because there's a huge range of groups getting grants, but some of them wouldn't have the sets of accounts.
Yeah. We're applicable.
Yeah.
Councillor Robertson.
Sorry, I would have thought we would be developing a reporting framework through the Audit and Risk Committee that then comes back. But rather than just straight out saying, please could you send us your brochures on what you've been up to, we actually internally need to get organised with a proper reporting process.
Okay, can we have the motion read out again, please?
Receive a report on the effectiveness and outcomes of each grant, including both water grants at the end of this financial year.
Is there any further discussion on that, Councillor Laws?
Can I just, Stephen, I think you've been misinformed on what the Manuhira Kia Catchment Water Strategy Group have said. I'm quoting you directly, their chairman, Alan Kane. And he said that the limits proposed by the Otago Regional Council could threaten the viability of the raising of the falls dam being investigated by the group. If a high minimum flow was set, quote, storage water from the dam would need to be used to maintain the minimum flow and might not be available for irrigation. Goes on to say if more storage was then needed, the cost of the scheme would go up and fewer farmers might sign up for it. So it seems to me that he's willing to enter the political process there.
Yep. I wasn't aware of that statement.
That's why I'm raising.
This notion's been around for a long time. I've had it raised with Karuk, it's probably a year ago, that, you know, the possibly conflicts. Yes. Okay, we've got a motion. Any further discussion on that? Well, we'll deal with it now. I'll put it to the meeting. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Okay, we'll move on to personal grievances.
No, I was just waiting to get that information there. I take it that we put this information in the annual report as well?
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah, it comments that that's actually where the remuneration note 20, at the bottom of that note, it lists the number and those amounts.
Right. And that's great. Thank you very much for that. And the legal cases, they're not here at the moment. Is there a reporting mechanism for those through to the council?
Okay, sorry, before personal grievance, any other comment on that?
Can I seek clarification between a personal grievance and a severance payment? I'm a little confused. I think what we're looking at is severance payments as part of the normal employment process and not personal grievances.
Through the chair, it's the severance payments can be in relation to a claim that is made.
Right.
So, in effect, the definition of a personal grievance is making a claim. You know, the extreme of a personal grievance is that it goes through the employment court.
Yep.
But all that somebody has to do to, in effect, make a personal grievance is make a claim. In those cases, then, it may lead to a severance payment. So, that's the two are connected, although they might not technically be a personal grievance.
Right. Thank you for clarifying that.
Okay, any other further comment there about legal cases, Councillor Laws?
On the legal cases, I can only report some organisations I've been involved with. They tend to give you an update every 6 weeks, so in your reporting mechanisms of legal cases that you're involved with, potential risk and things like that. And I haven't seen it here, and that's why I raised it with the Audit and Risk Committee fellow councillors, because it wasn't there either. I just want to make sure that the legal cases in which the council is involved and to which we have exposure for are reported properly to us, and I would have thought that it should come through this particular committee. It goes towards the risk, that's fine, but I would have thought this particular committee, and that's why I've raised the issue. And I wonder if we could just have it as a, part of our normal reporting process every 6 weeks, that these are the progress on the legal risk that the council faces, because we don't seem to have that mechanism exist at the moment.
This is a very grey area though, because we're obviously involved legally in so many different areas like environment court.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Already under the regulatory, we get much reporting on all the legal proceedings that are going on.
Yes, but we don't get progress reports on them.
Oh, we do actually.
Where?
It tells you. You don't end up seeing the outcome unless you pursue it, that's true. But they're all there on what stage they're at.
No.
Oh, just there's two separate things. The The reason why this one is more, this request is more complicated, because it does say all legal cases. In regulatory, we give a regular update on prosecutions that we are taking.
That's right.
But legal cases can involve numerous other things. For example, plan change appeals, RPS appeals. And yes, we don't do an overall summary. We report on those various things through other committees or other papers when they're ongoing. But from the point of view of an overall summary of those legal cases, no, we don't prepare a report on that.
And that's what I was saying, that every 6 weeks if we can get it updated where we are. For example, if we're in an environment court case, I'd like to know what the progress of that particular environment court case is, and that you can update every 6 weeks. Nick's right. The only one I've seen is the prosecutions. It's sort of a summary thing of prosecutions that we take, not cases that we're involved in and therefore not the legal risk that we're potentially exposed to.
Okay, any further comment? I thought we do get an update on
that. Well, could you show me that list? Because I've been here 4.5 months and I haven't seen that.
Well, they come up every month.
On this very agenda, there's
regulatory or policy, I can never remember, but I always read
it. Well, where is it here?
Well, in this very agenda, there's updates on some of the things.
On RPS, plan changes.
But but the question I asked was, does it include all your cases that you're currently involved with? Is there an update on them? And it seems to me that they're right, that... You see, I don't know the answer to that question either, Stephen.
Yeah. I mean, Mr. Dolly, can you answer?
Mr. Dolly.
I believe, just from memory, that it focuses on prosecutions. The other ones might be mentioned, RPS, sometimes, but there's not a, for example, there's not a report that says here is all the cases that we are currently involved in.
Look, the reality is the Council of Lords has got a point. You know, this information is fragmented and spread through all different reports, and it's difficult to know as a councillor where we're actually at. And in fact, some particular cases you wouldn't actually find out about or wouldn't be immediately clear. Like even, for example, these personal grievances ones here, you know, these four, it says these payments were reported in the annual report. Well, they certainly weren't verbalised to councillors. You know, I mean, this is the first time that we've had a Pacific, as far as I can remember, you know, talking about personal grievances there in black and white, you know, from the government's perspective, had we got an issue, or was this just a little blip? It's difficult for councillors to interpret the information they've got in terms of their legal responsibilities, let alone the community. And I, you know, even for example, you know, regulatory, you know, there's prosecutions, there's infringement notices, you know, what about the, you know, no, don't get me going. I think we can improve.
I think Councillor Scott is entirely on the wrong track when he talks about this business being fragmented and all over the place. What in fact it is in context. If we were to sweep together all the fragments of legal activity and put them onto a couple of pages every 6 weeks, it would make almost no sense whatsoever, because it would be out of context. We wouldn't know what the setting was. We wouldn't know what was trying to be achieved. I'm happy with the way we go about reporting progress on these matters now. If it can be improved, that's cool. But I can't immediately think of any way in which it could be improved.
Okay. Well, I think we've got the directors here and they're hearing this discussion.
I don't think that the directors hearing this discussion is an answer to it. I've argued this before. If we're talking about governance and we need to provide a direction, then we need a motion on the books. So I'm happy to move one. And that is that a summary of all legal cases involving the Otago Regional Council will be provided to the next meeting of the Finance and... what's it called? Finance and... or the Finance Committee. Because I haven't seen all that information gathered in one place yet. It's not reported in the annual report. It's not in our annual plan, and it doesn't come to our mechanism this way. And I'm not asking for anything that's extraordinary. This is the way that most other councils operate. And it's a summary so that it allows us to say, what's happening here? It gives us the ability to provide an overview to say, how far involved can we go in that one? Is there a potential risk that's coming out of that? And it's just a normal reporting mechanism, so I don't think it's anything extraordinary. So that's the motion that I would move.
Is finance and corp the most appropriate place? Well, as opposed
it's just
to
that
we'll
get set in 6 weeks' time and have the ability to discuss it. But and then we can decide if it's going to go through audit and risk or whatever. But I do think it would be lovely for all councillors to be able to say, these are the legal risks that we're being involved in, and have the ability to question that.
Councillor Bell.
Yeah, I'd just like to say I agree with Councillor Laws. It seems a simple way from my perspective as a councillor to be able to pick up something that says this is what it all is, it's happening. And if that can be done, which I think it should be able to be done, I believe that is the appropriate way to go. I must admit that whenever that did happen in my days on CODC, we used to have a report that came from the chief executive on his portfolio.
Same.
Reporting that actually stated all those things under his banner.
Exactly. So,
any further views? Well, my view is I disagree. I support what Councillor Deegan, I think we've already got the processes in place, and maybe they need sharpened up a bit. But any further comment, Councillor?
Yeah, I support Councillor Deegan that it needs to have context around it, and if we do need to report them, and perhaps sometimes we miss some of them, but. They come up through the various directorates, through various committees, and that's where they should be, I believe, with context and discussion around them. But yeah, perhaps we need to sharpen up on making sure that they are.
Any further comment? Could I have the motion read out again, please?
In summary, all legal cases
okay, if there's no further discussion, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against?
No.
Show of hands. Please.
Call for a division.
Call for a division. Yeah, sorry.
Yes.
Was that motion set?
Well, I was on the motion seeking it, but maybe didn't say that.
It didn't.
No.
Councillor Bell.
I'm brief.
Councillor Brown.
Against.
Councillor Deegan.
Against.
Councillor Hope.
For.
Councillor Kempton.
Against.
Councillor Dawes.
In favour.
Councillor Neal.
Against.
Councillor New.
No.
Councillor Robertson.
Aye.
Councillor Scott.
For.
Councillor Woodhead.
Against.
Against 4, against 7.
Mm-hmm. So the motion's lost. One thing, a recommendation that these reports be received. Someone move that, please.
Same.
Thank you, Councillor Neal. Seconded by Councillor Bell. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Against, carried. Financial report to the 31 March. Any comment on that? I've got a bit of a look through it. It takes a bit of getting your head around it all, but you seem to be ticking along okay generally. Obviously, there's unders and overs. But, Mr. Dolly?
I'd just comment the comments on the activity spend, which is the last 3 pages, has got the comments there. But that follows on from the previous council meeting where we had the 8-month report, so the majority of those comments are in line with what was reported 4 weeks ago. It's just an update on the financial status on each of those activities for the additional month to March.
Any comment on this? Alright, the recommendation. I'll move a receipt this report. Sorry, Councillor.
Implementation of Regional Plan Water 1C, and it says that the project is under expended by 247k against a budget of 561k, mainly due to reorganisation of staff groups and resulting in pure staff performance of work provided for in the budget. Now, look, we've had different discussions over time, but the big picture is, pushing the discussions aside, that's of concern. Are we back on track in terms of the appropriate number of staff doing the appropriate job to achieve the appropriate outcomes from a financial perspective?
Okay, who's going to comment on that?
I can probably comment from a financial perspective. What we've got, the reorganisation there is, you've got Regional Clean Water 1C, we've got a couple of paragraphs down is the minimum flow project. So that's the reorganisation, is that we separated out the two pieces of work and split the budget, and there's an offset. You can see the minimum flow project is overspent. So the two are basically offsetting each other. It's just the budgets weren't necessarily... when we split them, we didn't get the budgets exactly right. But there's an offset between the under and over on those two projects. But Mr. McRae could probably comment further, because it's largely in the policy areas.
It was originally one budget.
Yeah,
okay. Split in half, and they didn't quite get the dollar split.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you.
Any further comment? Have a second for that recommendation?
Have a second, that is Stuart.
Thank you, Councillor Woodhead. All those in favour, please say aye. Aye. Against, carry. Next is, we have to move the recommendations from the Audit and Risk Committee back on page 12. If you're on. Sorry, we're a wee bit out of alignment here, but.
Happy to move then, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Seconder. Councillor Kenton. Any comment on them?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have to admit that I have never taken an interest, is not quite the right phrase, I have taken interest, but I have never felt very well informed about the Audit and Risk Committee. The minutes are pretty skeletal. I kind of understand what its purpose is, but I'm inclined to support the view that I think has been expressed by Councillor Lord, that that committee is not sufficiently in front of mind as to what it's doing, why it's doing it, what conclusions it's reaching, how broad or narrow its scope is. I'm not quite sure of the solution to all this. I know I'm raising problems and not answers, and that's bad, but I don't feel comfortable about the relationship between this council and this exclusive and private little branch called the Audit and Risk Committee.
As I'm very going to attend, we've made that very clear, in fact, I've made that quite clear in the past. Councillor Deco, from my perspective, I agree to some degree. This is a rather new committee. I think we've perhaps still defined our feet a bit. I raised at the last meeting that the fact we meet so infrequently is a bit of an issue, and we tend to get a bit rusty. And I know our first meeting of this term, we didn't have the minutes of the previous meeting. So, I agree with your sentiments. We need to have a wee look at it.
Yep.
Councillor Laws?
Well, you know my views on this, because you were there when I expressed them to your risk committee, and I certainly not capsulated in these minutes, Michael. My concern is twofold. The first I expressed, and I'm now picking up, Michael, what you said, and you're absolutely right. If you're going to have a Northern Risk Committee, every committee member should, every member of their governance team should be on. It's just ludicrous the way it's going. Secondly, Michael, they run every quarter or 3 months or whatever it's going to be. So it really, you're on top of risk like, Joseph Parker's on top of Hugh Fury. It's just not happening. It's just too long a delay to really be able to get a grip of it. Can I suggest, and I'll just raise this issue now, that if we are going to have a Rural Risk Committee, that all members of the council are on it. Because that would immeasurably improve the overview of this committee. The second thing is the way in which the committee is structured, I don't think properly advises us of what the risks are attending this organisation. And there's nothing in these minutes that says we've got any risks at all. The Audit Risk Committee meeting I attended was largely a reporting mechanism, Michael, about what's been. It wasn't an anticipatory one about what's coming. And that's where our focus needs to be. Audit is where you look at what you've done and whether or not you've done it effectively. Risk is when you look at the future and how you're going to plan for it. So I'd like to move that all members of the Otago Regional Council Governance Team become members of the Audit and Risk Committee.
Is it appropriate to do that, or is it just approving the recommendations?
Yeah.
I'm not too sure we can do that.
Well, it flows from that.
Mr. Bowen, Dave.
It does flow from it, Dave.
Councillor Woody.
So, no, I don't think we can do that today, but what we can do is when we set up the committee structures, we agreed to review that in June.
And that's coming up.
So that I think is the appropriate time for that discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good for me, Stephen.
And I'll just add on to the Audit and Risk Committee took a while to find its feet in the last triennium, but got there in the last 12 to 18 months, in my view, and is taking account of the things that have been raised and the risk. What we haven't got is the visibility of the detail from inside that committee for councils. So I think it's more of a communication issue rather than the actual work of Audit and Risk. But let's talk about that when we review our structure in June. I think it's we're talking about in the June council meeting.
I'm not too sure why most organisations have a smaller committee than the whole. I'd be interested to talk to the industry directors as the reasons for that.
Yes.
Take some advice on that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Councillor.
I just wanted to speak in support of the Audit and Risk Committee too. I think we've come a really long way. Obviously, yeah, we're still a work in progress. We've got frameworks around health and safety, around we're developing risk frameworks. So we're not sitting there sort of randomly reporting back on things. We, they're within a structure. And a major improvement, having an independent chair as well working with us. I think I don't see a problem, I don't know if Mr. Donnelly would, with all the papers being circulated around all councillors before we had an Audit and Risk Day meeting. Just transparency, if we're not all part of the we all see the papers, because I feel they're very high quality and I'm proud of what we do in Audit and Risk Committee.
Mr. Donnelly.
Just the all the papers, including whatever is in committee, is circulated to all councillors, and in your Dropbox, if you look at, you will see the Audit and Risk will be there as well. So everybody's got access to all of the papers, including the in committee papers.
Any further comment? Well, we'll deal with these recommendations. We've got to move in a second, but all those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, carried. We'll move to the in-committee parts of the last Finance and Corp Committee. And it's separate on the iPads, and also the last Audit and Risk in-committee part for the recommendations to be endorsed there. I can move it to going committee. For the reasons stated, thank you, Councillor Mead. Seconded by Councillor Hope. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. I've got to say the first one is the Finance and Corp Committee, in committee. Any comment there? If not, I move those minutes. Seconded, please.
Happy to second, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Woodhead. Any comment? None. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. The in committee minutes, or the recommendation, of the Finance and Audit and Risk Committee of the 8th of March.
Happy to move the next chair.
Councillor Woodhead, seconded by Councillor Hope. Any comment? None. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. I move it out of committee. Seconded by Councillor Moon. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. That's it. Sorry it's been so long.
There's always a bit of chunky stuff here.